to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning, and I throw you a life jacket. Would you?
Well, welcome back to Section Jax. I'm Tom Holley. Mr. Dave Scatino on the board. SP Futures up 11. NASDAQ Futures up 119. And we got the Dow up. Actually, Dow's up very little. Dow is up. Actually, Dow's down 3, so a little bit of a mix. We got Goldman Sachs down 275, and Johnson & Johnson down to down 94, so it's kind of holding the Dow down right now for a little. Do we have Mr. Liu?
Good morning, sir.
I didn't hear you, David, but I'm hearing Lou. Lou, how are you, buddy?
I'm good. How's it going?
All right, except cold here today for opening day for the Cubbies.
I saw that. It's 70-something here. We had 4 inches of snow on Monday, and we had a 41 or maybe like 55-degree temperature swing when you consider the high and low for the previous day. So it's springtime in the Rockies. How many people are they going to let watch the Cubbies?
There's going to be people there. What's the number, David? Is it 8 or 10 or something?
I think it's 10. I'll double check.
Yeah, I think it's
So here it's 25% capacity, which is ridiculous. And they're making them wear masks outside, which is stupid.
Freedom is not
the basis for that is, but
freedom is a negotiation, Lou. Right now, you have to understand that.
Yeah, apparently so. In any event, they're going to allow, I think it's 25% capacity at Coors Field, which, in my opinion, as much as I like Wrigley, and I think Wrigley is a wonderfully intimate place to watch a baseball game, in terms of scenic, it's hard to beat the going to Coors Field with the sun going down behind the Rocky Mountains behind you and watching a baseball game.
Well, the venues, is whether you like them or not, have all changed as the games have sort of expanded. I mean, not to act like an old fart here, but when Wrigley was built, when Notre Dame Stadium was built, the game was 2 hours long. You got there, you never really left your seat except for a hot dog, and that was it. And the place was designed for a two-hour event, two and a half maybe. But the same way with Notre Dame seats, which were, you don't have a back on the darn things. It was designed for 2.5 hour football, not 4. And now the big stadiums, there's all kinds of places to wander around. If you bring people with you, don't even care about the game. There's places for them to go and hang out, and just a whole different program. Well, I mean, it's just different.
Oh yeah, oh no. Coors is like the place in Baltimore, that was built with early '90s, the first of the. Sort of retro stadiums. In fact, you and I've had this conversation that the Sox stadium was the last of the kind of quasi, suburban baseball stadiums. The Coors and the rest of them have all been built so that they're right downtown and, reasonably accessible to, mass transit and people can get in and but not designed really for driving. I mean, if you want to go, you take the bus, you take the train and, but laid out, you're right, laid out for a more total experience of going to a game and really planning on spending some time there.
Well, yeah, you look at look what happened with the basketball, changing subjects. It was, thinking about that on a one end, I mean, nobody got to go to the NCAAs, but really, if you went there, we're talking about 80 minutes of basketball in a 5-hour time slot.
Yeah.
I mean, what if you were actually there watching those two games? Jesus. I mean, it's just, I don't even think it's worth going myself, but that's just me. I mean, I went through.
It's a little bit like the, pro football. At some point, pro football, switched from a fan view experience to a fan presence experience. The idea being that you wanted to be able to say to whoever, hey, I was at the game or I saw that game, as opposed to seeing it on TV. Because the revenue is all coming from TV.
That's
and
right.
In fact, on TV is arguably better. In the sense that you've got, the multiple replays and the things that they can do, during the lags in the game, but you just don't get it an in-person experience. But now it's the idea that, you know, we should come in, and you should be able to come in and go home at the end of it and say, I saw that game. Well, I was at the game yesterday. I mean, it's a status thing. It certainly wasn't in D.C. when the Redskins were winning. Can I say that? I guess I could still call them the Redskins historically. When the Redskins were winning, my impression is it's that way in Chicago. I mean, in a couple of Bears games I went to, I think a lot of people were there just for the pleasure of saying, oh, yeah, I saw them play Green Bay, or I saw them do whatever.
Well, it's an experience. I mean, that's why if you have Bear tickets, even now, well, Green Bay's pretty good, but even now, I mean, if you have four together, especially in the great unwashed side, you know, the cheaper ones, you can get two or three times face for a Packer game. People just want to come, well, not last year, but to Chicago for the weekend and hit the bars, hit the restaurants, and go to the game. I mean, it's an experience. It's not just a Bear game.
Yeah. Let me just continue our sports talk here a little bit, because I'm kind of thrilled we actually got the sports part of it in right out of the gate. I wanted just to address this idiocy on equal pay that's being raised by the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team, and specifically by Megan Rapinoe. And just, we've talked a little bit about this previously. For some reason, this woman keeps surfacing, and I'm not sure why.
Because
except maybe because the press will listen to her.
But for some reason, she
keeps surfacing on this equal pay thing, and she keeps saying dumber and dumber things. And I just wanted to address this briefly, because this, again, being an employment lawyer, this falls in my wheelhouse in terms of this whole equal pay thing. But almost none of the stories lead with the fact that the women's national soccer team sued U.S. Soccer for equal under an equal pay theory and lost. The judge, listening to their complaint, said, "You know, you do get paid. You're getting paid less per game. That's true, but you're getting paid under a contract that you negotiated in 2016." A collective bargaining agreement that, oh, by the way, by the time you brought this lawsuit, had lapsed, but everybody continued to play under it because the players were negotiating a new one. But under this collective bargaining agreement that you negotiated, all the women get paid. The men only get paid if they play. So they get paid more because there's only a certain number of them actually playing in a game. And that's a small number. It's a small number that gets paid. So those paychecks, the same amount of money distributed over a smaller group, means that group is going to get more per game. In addition, you negotiated benefits like maternity care and child leave and a bunch of other stuff in here that also apply to all the women on the team. The guys, you know, being typical young men, the guys didn't do that. They didn't care. They think they're going to live forever.
Oh, yeah.
So they didn't negotiate any of that. In short, a collectively bargained agreement like this is presumed to be valid and presumed to reflect the will and the intent of the parties, especially in a situation like this where you know, both sides are represented by counsel and they've had a chance to go back and forth. And there are clear priorities that the women's team had that the men's team just, we don't care. Show us the money, is the men's team, and show us the money to the people who are playing.
Plus, I'm going to be always the guy playing. I don't care about the other guys, so screw them.
Well, it was just a completely different setup, and you know the court that should have been obvious to the. I think the women were figuring we can throw enough smoke up and confuse the issues sufficiently so the court doesn't get rule summary judgment. And then when we get in front of a jury, we can say, oh, my God, look at this. They get more per game than we do. Isn't that unfair? And so they lost, and they lost big. The only thing that's left of that case that I'm aware of, and I'm not sure whether it's settled out yet, but the only thing that was left of that case were some differences in per diem payments and hotel allowances and things like that. I don't know whether U.S. Soccer decided to settle that. But, you know, Rapinoe was at the White House with cantaloupe brain talking about, and I'm irritated at this. I'm irritated that this issue is getting so badly distorted. Was at the White House talking to, you know, the president and giving her pitch and saying how unfair it is that the women's the women's game does not get the same payout. And I mean, the short answer is, Ms. Rapinoe, you and your people are entertainers. If you want more money, you have to be more entertaining. You know, the short answer is the Women's Soccer League in the United States, I mean, soccer's not a huge revenue sport anyway compared to the big three, but the Women's Soccer League in the United States draws a smidgen of the people in attendance for its games, and even MLS does. And when the men's national team plays in international competition, now, admittedly, the men's national team kind of stinks and is not going to make it now to the World Cup because they got beat by Honduras.
They didn't make it the last one either, did they?
While the women will go into the championship. Sorry, go ahead.
I said the men didn't make the last one, did they?
No. And so the men don't have the kind of success, but people come see the men play. And moreover, if they were to get into World Cup play, you know, 3.6 billion people, something like 40% of the, you know, I don't know, whatever it is, 40% of the population of the planet watched the World Cup. 700 and some odd million watched the Women's World Cup. I'm sorry. Those numbers just aren't very good in terms of revenue generation. Moreover, you have a very difficult time outside of maybe the U.S. where countries are able, people in the countries, you know, overseas are able to name star female players. That's changing.
I'm totally lost on this in the sense that is the women's or men's national team the same as the Olympic team?
Well, they select the pool of players is the same, and yes, that's the feeder for the Olympic team.
Because I think the women probably get as, I won't gonna say almost as big, but I think the women do very well viewership wise in the Olympics.
They do okay. I mean they do okay, but they're not the draw. It's just not the same draw.
I understand.
It's not the same product. It's like the women's NBA versus the NBA. Or, more pointedly, it's like the NCAA playoffs with women involved versus the NCAA playoffs with men.
Yeah.
You know, you hold up a championship round in Indianapolis, you hold, if the NCAAs were working the way they normally would, you would have these huge gatherings for the initial weekend at various sites around the country. Those venues fill up immediately. People storm the place. They love being there. And that goes all the way through the tournament. The women's tournament doesn't even play in neutral sites. They start their process at one of the schools.
Yeah,
and those games don't even sell out.
I understand.
It's just a difference.
While you're on a rant,
product.
What did the players get for the 17th game in pro football?
Ah, isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Yeah, good question. So typically those contracts are not going to be adjusted. So what that means for the players, at least as far as I could tell from reading the press reports, is that the checks per game are going to go down.
That's what I was going to ask you. How can that be? What kind of union is that?
Well, the number, the actual compensation will be reflected in the salary cap that will be set after that 17th game season is played. So to the extent that you're going to get, you say, well, the owners are going to get more money because of that extra game. That's worth another, I don't know, 300, 400 million in revenue. Especially given the fact that it looks like it's going to come late. Well, I don't know. They're killing a preseason game. So I'm not really clear. I haven't looked at the schedule. I'm not really clear whether the game is starting sooner or playing later. I think it's playing later.
I'm guessing if they kill a preseason game, it's probably going to start Labor Day weekend, so the weekend after.
Yeah. Okay. That's. I think that's probably correct. In any event, the first season, it's basically a windfall for the owners because they get that extra game played. The salary cap has been adjusted, but it doesn't really reflect the revenue from that 17th game. The following year, salary cap will be adjusted based on that revenue, and you should see a bump up, so the per game per compensation should rise. I'm going to be real interested because we'll know about the wear and tear on the players with that extra game.
Why don't we just go to like 40 games? I mean, the people betting on them will love them. Why have any limit whatsoever from these guys? I mean,
well, you can't keep people on the field, Chief.
I understand that, but I'm saying, but they keep nudging it. It'll be, you know, they keep nudging it a game every few years. I mean, where are we going to tap out? 40?
I don't see, based on the injuries and the recovery time and the surgery and recovery time, I'm not sure you can you can punch much more in there than what you've got right now. So for most teams, the season will end, January. So the league year starts in March, the beginning of March, where everybody gets things get renegotiated. Draft in April. Everybody got wrecked during the previous season, is in rehab, you know, full recovery, working out. I don't know if they can expand it much more and expect to have people on the field, you know, recovered from the damage that they're going to do over the course of the regular season. I just don't see it expanding much beyond that.
So I'll
be real interested to see the numbers.
Well, so they didn't get the roster didn't expand from 45 to 47 or 46 to account for the wear and tear, nothing like that.
They had already expanded. I haven't looked at the expansion of the rosters, but they had already expanded the roster for COVID anyway. And I don't know if that was. I think that was temporary. You know, the collective bargaining agreement was ratified by a very narrow vote of the players something like 2 weeks before the lockdown started last March. And so I don't think there's been an emergency adjustment or an amendment to expand the roster size. So people are going to play those 17 games with the same number of players that they've got right now.
Did you, have you been up on this Georgia voting rights thing at all?
Yes.
I'm going to admit to David, the listeners, and my buddy Lou, I went through. I read last night. I tried to actually read the law or the changes. Lou, without any idea of what it looked like before, it's hard for me to even figure out what the hell they're doing. I'm stunned by the, you know, again, I'm kind of old school on this. The idea that there's an election day now, I would love to have it like it is in Europe where you pick a Sunday and you're trying to get a day where most people, the weather's nice and it's the best day to do these kinds of things. But obviously that's not the program here. We want to make it as difficult as possible in a lot of ways. I mean, both parties would love to have it as difficult as possible for the other side's people. I mean, we know that. I mean, that's, if you cut away all the BS, I mean, that's really, but I'm reading this thing and it struck me as, Louis, it's incredibly complicated, and every paragraph, every rule in there is designed essentially to favor one side or screw somebody. We've gone so, I mean, the thing is how many pages long instead of just go to your precinct and vote. I mean, I don't know how we got there from here. I mean, I can't figure out whether the stuff is that restrictive or, you know, there's got to be one ballot box in every county or one dump box in every county, but we're going to, you can't do it the day before the election. It's got to be the week before, and the mail has to go out on such and such a date. It has to be. I mean, who even thought all this stuff up, Lou?
Well, I think, I mean, I've looked at it. I think it's actually a reasonable attempt to limit the problems with absentee voting. And so when you are going to say to people, look, we're not going to allow you to vote absentee except in very special circumstances, but we're going to open up early voting and you know, modify our currently fairly strict show up rules so that it's easier for you to get to a ballot box and before the election. But we're not going to allow early voting for an extended period of time. We're going to try to set it as close to the election as possible. I mean, here in Colorado, I haven't voted in person since I arrived. When you and to a certain extent, that statute is modeled on states like Colorado, where for years, what's happened is I register, I have an address associated with my name, I am mailed a ballot, I fill out the ballot, I sign it, and then I walk it over to. I've got three options: I can drop it in the mail, or I can drop it in one of the special in-person ballot boxes that you go to drop it, or I can show up at the polling place, not complete the ballot at all, and just show up at the polling place and register and vote in person. But what happens is when I put that ballot into either the mail or one of those voting boxes, I start getting text messages. First text message says your ballot has been registered as being received. So, for example, this last election, one of my friends voted and did not within 36 hours get a text message saying your vote's been received. And he called up the number of the hotline in the election office and said that ballot is lost. And so they said, fine, let's we'll rescan it, or we'll void it. We'll send you a new one. And so they sent him a new one, voided that vote. And again, this can all be done electronically and digitally because those things are scannable. And it works amazingly well. I get a text saying your vote's been received, and then a scan saying your vote's been recorded. And I know that the system's got it, and I know that my ballot has gone in. I also know if somebody else puts a ballot in with my name on it, because it will flag it and send me a message saying, oh, by the way, there's another ballot with your name on it or your registration on it floating around somewhere.
Doesn't bother you that everybody knows the way you voted?
I'm sorry?
Doesn't bother you that everybody knows the way you voted?
That's the one issue that I have, and it's not everybody quote unquote knows, but I mean in theory they say the minute your ballot goes in, the fact that you voted is recorded, and then the ballot is processed anonymously. I don't believe that.
I don't believe that either.
I mean, I don't think that there is a complete severing of the digital connection between my name and that ballot.
The crap in Georgia had all kinds of stuff.
That's a potential problem.
The crap in Georgia. But I just, when something goes into that level of detail, Lou, I just got an overall bad feeling.
But you know why it's at that level of detail? It's at that level of detail because the lawyers got involved.
Well, I mean, the part about you have to put your driver's license number down or some other ID number, which essentially makes you have to have an ID, which in some states you didn't have to before. But get a load of this. They said, don't worry.
You don't have to show an ID in Illinois. I never showed an ID when I voted. I just had to sign.
I actually had to show an ID this time because I didn't realize that when I first moved into the hood 20 years ago, I used to use Thomas as my signature. Now I've gotten lazy and just put Tom. And they said, well, we don't know if this is your signature. Would you mind showing us an ID? And sure enough, I pulled out my driver's license. They had Tom on there. And I said, okay, go ahead. So they actually went.
That's good.
They actually were pretty much.
Actually, that's very impressive.
But there was all kinds of weird stuff in this thing about, again, without knowing what to compare it to, it just seemed incredibly detailed for me. I couldn't figure out who was getting screwed by who. Because the part about all your ID cards and so forth, all your ID numbers, they go on a part of the envelope that when you lick it and seal it, that all gets disappeared. And I'm thinking, they're like, don't worry about any of that stuff. As soon as you seal it over, nobody can see it. And I'm going, wait, I mean, nobody can see it. All I can do is open it. It's right there. I mean, that part, I still don't quite get how we just don't make it incredibly convenient on a day for people to go to the polls and somebody who is out of town or is in the Army or something votes absentee. I really don't see why somebody who lives 40 feet from the polls.
And therein lies the issue. And I honestly believe that one side wants the ability to ballot harvest, ballot stuff, and maybe it's that side differs from state to state, but one side wants the ability to obfuscate the origin of ballots and obfuscate the actual process by which those ballots get to the ballot box. And mail-in ballots allow that. I don't know if you saw this. I heard it reported on one of my podcasts. I looked the story up. It's been buried, but you can find it. Missoula, Montana, for some reason, made a full audit of every vote that was cast in the last election. They went through and looked, took every ballot that came in, and they processed them and looked at all of them. And some incredible number that was sufficient, would have been sufficient to affect the results in a couple of races in Missoula, came in with no envelopes. You know, they're supposed to keep the envelopes so that they can ultimately go back and match, you know,
envelope ballot, in some states, look and see the same
number of envelopes versus the same number of ballots.
Right, from what I understand.
A significant percentage. Pardon me?
From what I understand, in some states, just what we're talking about, who voted, all the identification stuff supposed to be on the envelope, and once they get the two, they're supposed to throw the envelope out so nobody can trace it afterward. I mean, that's what I'm saying. It's kind of crazy all over the place.
Apparently Missoula was able to track which ones came in without envelopes, and it was a big number.
In some places you're supposed to throw it out because that's the lead where if somebody wants to find out who Lou voted for, they would harass him afterward. The envelope's the key.
Yeah.
So in some states they make you throw it out.
Well, apparently, as I said, in any event, what that tells you is obviously that there was a distinct possibility of some kind of ballot dumping or ballot harvesting where somebody went through and took, the names of people off the rolls, probably who hadn't voted in, the last two elections or so, and just took those names and filled ballots out for them and then put them in. And when you do an audit, you would see, just a sample audit, you would never find a situation where there wasn't a registered name associated with the ballot. An assessment of okay, a bunch of these didn't come in with the mail. So there's a one of the things that I think will never be acknowledged by the mainstream press, but there were a lot of irregularities, and you and I talked about them. There were a lot of irregularities in this last election. Whether they were dispositive, I think they were, but whether they were dispositive, we may not know. But there were a lot of irregularities, and it goes to the number of people who believe that the last election was rigged or stolen, and my personal take on that is you don't have to guess whether it was rigged. you have the article from Time Magazine where the riggers actually were sitting up there saying we did rig it and we're proud of it.
Well, you have to go to break here, Lou, because I honestly think, let's pick this up on the end, because I think both sides, to a huge extent, rig the hell out of it as best they can, depending on how much they can. SP Futures up to, but there's a yin and the yang between keeping the identification of the person near the ballot so you know who sent it in and trying to figure out who voted who. So, I don't know how that's a problem. It's like don't want to get wet, but want to learn how to swim, right? We want to make sure we know where they came from. However, we don't want to know where they came from. How do you do both? SP Futures up 12, NASDAQ Futures up 125. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck,
get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Dave Scatina on the board. S&P futures up 1250, NASDAQ futures up 126. Dow is now up 8. Individual stocks that are holding the Dow down a little bit are Goldman Sachs down 247 and Johnson & Johnson down 187, but other stuff is up, so... I think the Dow's going to end up probably up on the day. It looks like we're going to have 2 days in a row of being up. In Europe, we've got DAX up 52.3%, FTSE up 31.5%, CAC around up 14.2%. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 210, that's 0.7. Nikkei's been very volatile. Hong Kong today is the one that's up. Shanghai up 24, that's 0.7. Hong Kong is up 560, that's almost 2%. Just a way of review yesterday, Dow Jones was actually down 85, but S&Ps were up 14. NASDAQ was up 201, which is interesting. Bonds unchanged. Well, actually, they're down three basis points at 171. One minus 0.31. They got up above 0.3. It's hard to talk about this when they're negative. They got up above 0.3. And this, I don't quite get this, David and Lou. The inflation rate over in Europe came in yesterday at 1.3% as opposed to 0.9. How the hell do you give anybody your money for negative interest rates when when you're, by their admission, your money's worth 1.3% less at the end of the year? I just don't get this. Japan is up 0.12. That's a rise of 2 basis points. It's a big deal in Japan. Oil down 7 cents, 59.09. It was over 60 yesterday, so it's down some. Brent down 13 cents, 62.61. Natural gas unchanged, 260. RBOB unchanged, 195. Gold, we've got gold down a buck after a big rally yesterday. A big rally up to 1714, but it got down to like 1682. Silver up, down 17 cents, 2436. Again, it was below 24. Copper down 2 cents, 397. And we've got the crypto, Bitcoin down 634 to 58,501. It's stunning to me. All of a sudden, people are saying they're going to take payment in Bitcoin. I'd even do that when the thing moves around so much, but let's not talk about that today. David, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports, and exchange hours, because we've got the, well, there's no show tomorrow because the markets are closed, but they're still, this government is still coming out with their labor numbers, which a lot of times they don't do on the first or second of the month anyway, but now they're planning on doing it on Good Friday. Very strange, David. If I had to guess, I would say they want to bleepkin Good Friday as a holiday.
Yeah, maybe. It sure seems like that. Yeah. All right, good morning, everyone. It's 6:39 in Chicago. Happy April 1st. April Fool's on the highway for sure this morning.
Yep.
The south side's a mess, right by the I-80, Bishop Ford. We had accident. We had multiple car accidents, I-80, 94 west before, I-94, the exit ramp to Bishop Ford, I-94 east at Illinois 80, Illinois 394 backed up to US 6 at the 159th. Street exit 73, Bishop Ford, I-94 west before the steel bridge. They're saying the bridge is a sheet of ice. I've heard from 5 to 12 cars, multiple accidents. Also on the 55, then starting to back up this morning early for the exit ramp to going on to 94. Just a mess out there. Be careful on the south side. In Chicago, currently the weather is 27 and partly cloudy. The highs today, it's going to be a cold one for the opener. 37, sunshine mixed with clouds. In Phoenix, they're going to have a nice day. 60 and fair. The high today in Phoenix, 95 and sunny. Sports, baseball, opening day. The Cubs host the Pirates today at 1:20 p.m. The White Sox are at the Angels tonight with a 9:05 start, and the Diamondbacks are at the Padres today at 3:05. In the NBA last night, the Bulls lose to the Suns 121-116. NHL last night, Colorado beats Arizona 9-3, and tonight the Hawks take on the Carolina Hurricanes. As far as the numbers tomorrow, I talked to a friend of mine. The Treasury interest rate products will be open tomorrow on Good Friday until 10 p.m. So I'm not sure why they're doing it this time.
10 a.m.
Yep.
10 a.m.
So the floor will be open.
That's I don't get it. Now there are other times when we're actually an open day on the first or the second, and they push it to the next week.
That's what they usually do. But I got a call that CME will be open to interest rate products till 10 o'clock.
You got
tomorrow.
A call from a guy.
I got a guy.
So if it's 50 generations past us, David, are you still going to be calling the steel bridge when it's a new, when it's
I
a
know,
new bridge?
I know, isn't that? No, I'm reporting it as I read it.
Yeah. Well, you remember that bridge, Blue. It was, if you ever had a young kid, which I didn't have kids, but I had nephews and nieces. Matt would be the guy that works with us now. I went across the thing with my old Ram Charger, which Matt and there, and it was one of those, Blue, that they actually had the honeycomb on the bottom where you could see right through it. You know, it was a honeycomb bridge. So when you went across it, it made that huge noise. So Matt's like, hey, let's do that again. Right, Matt, you idiot, which he was only like 3 or 4. Hey, let's do that again, Uncle Tom. And I'm like, which I actually did turn around and go the other way for, but that's what people do for kids. But now there is a new bridge, but it's still going to be the steel bridge, though, no matter what.
Good. I like the continuity. I'm sure somebody will figure out that if it looks even remotely monumental, it's going to have some horrible anti-social justice affiliation with it, and it'll be torn down or attacked.
Oh yeah, we got to worry about that kind of stuff. But it's okay that we buy everything from China. We don't worry about that.
No,
we're going to go rough up a Chinese person is on our way to the Nike store.
Did you see some of these? I mean, I knew that. Well, first of all, Asian quote unquote hate crimes are not that common. They're much more common between other races, but some of the videos that are coming out right now of attacks on Asian Americans that are almost exclusively being done by you know, black whatever, I don't know what you call these guys. I mean, the attack that I just saw on video this morning was you know, a couple of what I would just consider to be typical, you know, kind of thugs or street punks attacking this Asian couple, but. The one, I think it's in New York, with the guy who was out on parole. He'd been out on parole for a while, but he was out on parole for killing his mother. And, he stomped this 65-year-old woman, you know, screaming at him, "Get her, you don't even belong here," on a street in New York. And, I don't understand what's happening. I mean, there were, that kind of violence was typically limited to neighborhoods where you had, you know, Korean store owners coming into black neighborhoods and the locals thought, you know, you're taking jobs away from, you know, from African Americans or whatever. That's where you saw that kind of stuff. This is unbelievable. And I don't understand why. I don't know why it's a big deal all of a sudden.
Lou, as economic times get tough normally, in no matter what, that we all know that there are all kinds of people sitting around in some place in the wife beater shirt with a beer that would have gone to Harvard if some black guy didn't get there ahead of him that didn't deserve it. And, of course, there's a black guy sitting around that if the white guys didn't get everything, he would be a big-time lawyer. So there's all kinds of people who sit around and do nothing and blaming everything on somebody else. You know,
the irony is that, you know, it's much easier for an African-American student to get into one of the elite schools than it is for an Asian student now. I mean, and that's the essence of those lawsuits against Harvard and Yale and Columbia, that where they literally adjusted their admissions criteria to downgrade Asians on the basis of their personality type, so that they could give them fewer points vis-a-vis black, predominantly black, but other non-Asian applicants.
Well, some of it is, and I mean, this goes back a ways. I mean, you know, when you run these universities, and I don't know how they sort of manage to balance it. Sometimes I think they do. Sometimes I don't know if they do or not. But I mean, when I was young, I mean, and you had people from the East Coast. The big problem then was if you just had things open for grades at Columbia and places like that, your big time schools. If you just took the top kids in grade, you're going to end up with all the Jewish kids, because they're the ones that studied, right? Right.
And they limited limited that back in the 20s and 30s.
But then there were
anti-Semitic criteria put in place specifically to deny Jews admission to those universities.
But then they said. But then the other story was, I mean, we don't want a school with 60 or 70% of all one type of people, whoever they are. I mean, right? I mean, it's, you know, so I mean...
In theory, yes.
Yes, in theory, yeah. I mean, Notre Dame, when I went there, was essentially pretty smart, middle class, not genius smart, pretty smart, middle class kids from the Midwest that were mostly Irish, and that was it. I mean, that's who went there. There were only 6,500, actually, there were 5,800 undergrads in Ireland, or 6,200. That's who was there. There were 12 from my high school. There were... I don't know how many from Fenwick, how many from Brother Rice, how many from St. Vitus. There had to be 15 guys. I mean, there are all kinds from Cathedral in Indianapolis. And what's the one where Jerry Mulder came from? Jerry Faust.
Yeah, Cincinnati.
You know, Cincinnati Mulder. What's the place? Clayton Durham up in Minnesota would send 10 people. I mean, that's what it was. Now all of a sudden, oh, no, we have all this. I'm not saying it's better or worse, but now all of a sudden, we have to have people from Uganda. Okay, well, that's fine. I don't have a problem with people, but you constantly do this, and every time you do that, every time you bring somebody in for the purposes of diversity, you're essentially kicking somebody out that had a better score than him or her. Correct? I mean, you can't get around that unless you expand the. I mean, I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying if you do the math, that what's it? Because right now, if you try to get into Notre Dame and you're 15th in your class at Marist, good luck. You're the one who's the ass end. I'm not saying that's wrong. Maybe we shouldn't have gone there. I don't know. But why are people shocked that whenever you include somebody that isn't the strict criterion, that you're bouncing somebody in that according to your criterion is higher on the chain? I'm not saying you want to have Harvard to have, you know, out of 1,500 undergrads, 1,450 should be Asian. I guess if they're the ones that getting, I mean, you don't want that either. I guess I don't know why you don't want a homogenous group in a university. I mean, so I don't know what the answer is, Lou, but at least I understand what they're dealing with. At least try to.
I understand. I understand that from the standpoint of, yeah, we want a student body that is not homogenous. You know, has more variance in terms of background. And in terms of sort of lived experience, I'm pretty sure that's not what they're getting. Of course, the other issue with pure merit is you deny your legacy admissions, and that's a big deal.
Well, sure it is.
I mean, I think it's 40% think it's 40% of, you know, the average Ivy League school of the admissions are legacy in one form or another. That is, somebody has a, you know, within 2 degrees of familial separation has a, you know, history of having attended the school. I just, in my opinion, the use of race as a determinator, and that's what is happening. The use of race as a determinator rather than life experience, or rather than background, or whatever, is problematic for me. Because I think that flies in the face of our basic legal structure.
Well, I don't know what the rules are.
We don't use race for calculus and things like that. And by the way, if we have to lower our standards, you know, X amount, and that's what it amounts to, if we have to lower our standards X amount, when we bring these kids in for whom we've lowered the standard, they flunk. They fail. They would be much better off going to a school where they would be in the top third or the top quarter or the top 10% of their graduating class rather than the bottom 25%. There was a huge blow-up. The most recent one's at Georgetown Law. But before that, at Penn, with a professor named Annie Wax, the two people who just got fired from Georgetown for saying we can't get our black students into the upper half of our classes, and it's a problem, and I hate the fact that it's there. Just the discussion of that got those two people fired. Amy Wax, who was tenured, and Penn at least was respected that, 3 or 4 years ago said the same thing. You know, she said we shouldn't be bringing in people who clearly aren't going to make the academic standards that we impose here. And it doesn't matter what their race is. And then she said, I don't recall having a black student in the top half of any of my classes. And we need to reflect on why we're doing that and whether that actually benefits that kid from, you know, in terms of going forward with, you know, with expectations for life and everything else. So my take on affirmative action is, we are trying to affect the pipeline at the end of the pipeline. We're trying to force a distribution at the end of the pipeline, that is at the admissions point into college, rather than making the effort to affect it at the beginning of the pipeline, where we start getting more diverse kids out of these neighborhoods and saying, all right, to you know, African Americans or Hispanics, look, if you want to go to Harvard, if you want to go to Yale, if you want to go to one of the service academies, and we do this, and the service academies do this, if you want to go to one of the service academies in 8th grade or 7th grade, you got to start doing this and affect the entry into the pipeline, make the modification there. That I think is consistent with American culture, American legal, you know, legal culture and our standards on race, rather than just saying at the end of the pipeline, well, I got X number of black people, and I got to put into this class, and let's find a couple of people that might be qualified, or let's lower our standards until we get to that number. That's not how we're supposed to do things.
Well, Lou, we obviously start way too late, and we think we're going to fix stuff. Okay, I was in just quick story. One of the ladies used to trade for me, a terrific lady. Mary's a guy, nice guy. He was on the trading floor, and he ended up moving to Long Island because he went to a specialist firm in New York, and he's a Harvard guy. And you know, like I said, real bright, real nice, and he was a guy that he acted like some of the wacky Domers, where all he did was raise money for Harvard, which they don't need. But he was very much involved in the whole mess. And at some point, the guy's name was Dave. They said to him, "Dave, don't think you're doing this to get your daughter in here, because we're past that. It's not just for rich, pretty smart kids from the Northeast. She's not coming here." So if you're coming up, if you're raising money thinking that she's going to somehow weasel in, forget it. They actually told him that. And he's like, okay. And he still worked for him, but whatever, because he liked the place and he's a good guy. But I mean, they're basically telling you that's, but when I worked at the,
They should have told him, Chief, get her on the rowing team.
Yeah.
Get some rowing coach or some tennis coach to sign up and say, "Yeah, I want to make her incoming in as a
oh,
jock."
Oh, God, yeah.
And then they would have taken her.
Well, my gang here was doing some research with the stuff that we do at PTI. It was actually started by the Irish winning their 11th national title in fencing. And I knew this started years ago when the girl who won the Olympic gold medal, and she was like a freshman, went to Notre Dame. So, of course, they won like 4 years in a row earlier. Duh, go figure. And so my brother's digging around because we got a new one in the family. His granddaughter's, I don't know what that is to me, my nephew's son or daughter. And I guess I'm a great uncle or something, but... she's a little pistol. She's terrific. And so, but they decided that you got like a 10 times more chance of getting a fencing scholarship than you do any other sport if you actually know fencing. So I said, well, okay, that's fine. Where the hell do you learn how to fence? Well, nobody knew that. We, of course, drew a blank on that. But I mean, a lot of that stuff, you're right. It definitely happens. But Lou, when I was at the Chicago Public Schools and I was at a lot of the grammar schools and some of them were, you know, not the best. And it struck me as I was in the high schools, and a lot of these were, you know, minority high schools. And I mean, you see the slovenly dudes that wandering around in high school, and you wonder why they're even there during the day. And let's say the education is not the same as you and I were used to. And yet, at age 5 or 6, these kids are every bit as bright, every bit as anxious to be there, pleasant as all get out. And you wonder what happens to these kids between age 5 and 15. So you're right. We can do this. We just have to. We have to start early. You don't start at age 18 and say, "Well, they didn't do so hot no. all along the way," and then well, let's jam them into Harvard. I mean, that's not the program.
And let me. I think I may have talked about this number before, and it doesn't. It sounds like an unbelievable number, but I'm going to give it to you anyway. So, in 2006 or 2007, I was out at the Air Force Academy for a conference. With a bunch of people who were getting just we were senior class representatives and you know alumni class representatives, and they were giving us a briefing. So the registrar who handles all the admissions comes in to brief us, and he starts talking. You know, says this is the profile of the class. Da da da. It's got excellent proof. Yeah, here's our minority representation. Da da da. Boom boom boom. And then he says, now I want to talk to you guys about our minority. Reps because there are more minority class members because it's getting harder and harder to find qualified kids that are willing to give up, you know, what they need to give up to go to a service academy and come in here. And so an African-American, I think it was a colonel, he was in uniform, stood up and said, give me a rough estimate of what the candidate pool looks like in terms of kids that are eligible. To attend the service academy by eligible, you know, kids without criminal convictions, kids who aren't married, kids who you know don't have whose grades are good enough and whose test scores are good enough to have a shot at getting there, kids whose physical qualifications are satisfactory so that they can get through the physical part of the program. And so the registrar said, well, in this class this year that was admitted. Nationwide, there were 615 males, high school seniors, that were qualified for admission to the Air Force Academy. And you could have heard a pin drop in the room. And somebody said, that's impossible. And the registrar said, trust me, we've cooked these numbers every way we can. The most we come up with is this number, this incredibly low number. And he said, of course, these are the kids that, you know, Harvard and Yale and, you know, USC and UCLA and every other Ivy League school and every other service academy are going after. And I remember telling somebody, this is the end of the pipeline, and the end of the pipeline stinks. We have to get in there. The winnowing process, whatever's happening in our culture, the winnowing process for African Americans is horrific.
Yeah, Lou. When you do something different, like our friend Jean Morabito came in. She was on the show a couple times when she would come to Chicago more. She's the director of admissions engineering school at University of Michigan, and she knows a lot of the people here in Chicago that are doing some of the different stuff. Well, this Lindblom Math and Science Academy on the South Side, beautiful building, was absolutely in disrepair for years and years. So finally, and it's a horrible neighborhood. It's two blocks from where my grandmother used to live. And all of a sudden they gave the principal 2 years to totally remodel the place. Somehow or another, Lou, they got people from industry to go and teach math and science, and I don't know how they got them through the longevity years of the CPS. But anyway, when it's like 5 or 6 years, this is one of the top math and science academy schools in the state, and they're all essentially black kids from the surrounding area. It's not like there's no talent there. I mean, there's all kinds of talent there.
Chief, do you know what the most successful high schools in terms of graduation rates and kids going to college, the most successful high schools in Chicago are, other than the college prep schools, the three or four college prep schools? It's the Jay Rotzi schools.
Okay.
And there's a tremendous opposition to the Jay Rotzi program. But the Jay Rotzi schools produce kids who are in most cases, model citizens. They're eligible for enlist. They can go into the Army. They can get Rotzi scholarships. They can enlist in one of the services and be successful. But those programs, that kind of program, pays huge dividends. But we're not willing to embrace more of that. And when I say Jay Rotzi schools, I mean the entire school is assigned some part of Jay Rotzi outfit. The effect of Jay Rotzi programs and Jay Rotzi units within high school is also a real positive. But in Chicago, I remember reading that stat when I lived there, that those schools turned out kids that for the most part graduated, showed up on class to class, graduated, and then had the option were eligible to go into the military or to a service academy or just to college.
We got to dash here a little bit. Whenever we see all these shootings and stuff in these neighborhoods and horrible stuff going down, everybody thinks of the place as being a cesspool of God knows what. All I think about are the regular people who live there trying to make a day and are trying to live in that mess. I mean, those people don't seem to have any rights. The good kids, the good families. I don't get it. Anyway, Lou, have a nice weekend, buddy. We'll talk at you next week. SP Futures up 15, NASDAQ Futures up 136. Come back, Mr. Dan Janitas.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now.
Hello, North Bay Station Jacks. I'm Tom Howley, Mr. Dave Scantino on the board. S&P Futures up 1550. NASDAQ Futures up 160. It'll be 2 days in a row, big days for the NASDAQ, and pretty good days for the S&P. And the Dow, again, is kind of lagging after being ahead of everybody. We have Mr. Dan Janina. Dan, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I hear you're you heard Biden speak yesterday, and you're getting a little paving company together and trying to get four or five contracts, and then you're going to subcontract them out. And you're going to do fine.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we actually did get some great ideas from a conference last week, and their industrial names that I think will benefit from the infrastructure. And you know, as you know, we've been talking about a few of the other names like Blue Knight that were just, you know, I think have been fantastic purchases for not only being in the right place at the right time, but also being a well-managed company, and also being a company that's, you know, paying around 10% dividends. So we're looking at the first quarter and seeing, you know, we had a great first quarter on a relative basis. Going forward, we have added some industrial names on the equity side. You know, I'll mention one or two. The Aztec is a company that is focused on rebuilding roads, machinery, and construction. And ticker symbol there is ASTE. And this is what I would call a large small cap or a small mid cap company. Good management team, focus on cash flow, which is what our major focus has been. U.S. Concrete is another good company. They've already had a nice run here recently, up 10%, but concrete and aggregates, it's a, you know, I think that one, the name itself tells the story. Another one is Federal Signal, which is a Chicago-based company. It's at Oakbrook, Illinois, and it's originally started out 100 years ago as a siren, a company that made sirens for police cars. And they've actually moved into their larger segment of the business, which is specialty trucks. And they do see that there's going to be a major benefit from any continued infrastructure spending. And also say it's not just the spending. I think I've mentioned this before. We're seeing like a bombardment of building here in Florida. Roads, new homes, housing, condos, apartments. And I'm hearing that from people in other parts of the country as well. And this whole infrastructure play, I think it's a really good one right now. I think there's a lot of room for upside. I think for people who have a portfolio that's predominantly in the tech names and sort of the go-go names, makes a good balance to add some of these names into the portfolio that are expected to be good steady eddies over the next few years. And I think we're poised for this. I think interest rates are going up. We do have a very steep yield curve, though. I reviewed that again this morning, kind of going back to the beginning of the year. This very short end of the curve, like 1 month, 2 month, 3 month, 6 month, 1 year, have actually, you know, the yields have actually come down.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
It is crazy. And they were totally flat at the beginning of January, all the way out to 2 years. You basically, they were at 1%, and now there's, you know, there's curvature in the short end, the very short end of the curve. And then as you go out, obviously, the 5 years is actually, that would probably not a bad place to start. If you're looking to add some higher quality and not have the interest rate risk, you know, you're getting close to 1% there. We started out at 0.36. So that's been a significant increase. Obviously, you don't get as much bang for your buck, but you also have the downside protection. So if you want to put a little bit of money in a 5 year, 7 year is at, you know, gone from 0.64 to 1.4. That's more than a double. So on a percentage basis, you've seen a pretty big pickup in yield, not only in the 10 and the 30, but also in the 5 and the 7. So if I had to say, if you are going to step into fixed income on a higher quality, whether it be treasuries or if you need to, I should say, anything in the 5 to 7 year actually might make sense. I still like going shorter when it comes to corporates. I still think you get a fair amount of yield, as I've mentioned. I think there's still some spread compression to go here. But the bond market is definitely, you know, rates are turning up. And people will say day to day, you know, oh, okay, well, now it's, and all of a sudden, one day, you know, like last week, we had a couple of days where, you know, went from 175 down to 160 on the 10-year. And people, you know, what you hear is people saying, oh, now this isn't going to be a problem. And then all of a sudden, it turns back up to 174 yesterday. And it's, you know, somebody mentioned this, and I think it's an important thing to realize, is things don't go up in a straight line, you know, whether it's stock, you know, they're good stocks or whether they're interest rates. it's not, you know, day to day. You can't look at day to day movements. You got to look at the trend, and the trend is for higher rates. The trend is for good economic growth over the next year.
Well, Dan,
something else that I mentioned, I think I mentioned last week, but I want to emphasize again, because this is something that I think a lot of people are getting lost in. And this is when we talk about, you know, the economy and all these people without jobs and high unemployment. Well, I asked the CEOs of every company, and there were probably 15 or 20 companies that we spoke to last week, and I asked the CEOs of the companies that we currently own, they're having trouble finding help. And they're having trouble finding people to work in the factories and on the manufacturing level, but they're also having trouble finding engineers. And with an additional spending bill coming out, that's not gonna change. So we go back to the cost up of inflation. And on the wage side, I just see that continuing to go up. I think the numbers are somewhat skewed by people who've chosen to hold on to their unemployment benefits because maybe they're making more than they were before. It's not because there aren't jobs out there. We're seeing, you know, job postings, if you will, increasing, and, you know, at all levels, at both professional level and at the entry level.
Well, for a long time,
skilled labor. So,
how do you when people say that stuff? I mean, I'm not disparaging anybody you're talking to, but far from it. I was sitting having a sandwich, drinking a beer with my buddy Al one night, restaurateur Al, and he was bemoaning the fact that he couldn't get anybody for his restaurant. And I said, Al, how much are you paying? Well, I'm paying 10 and a quarter. That's the going rate. And I said, well, what if you paid $11.50? He goes, then I have all kinds of guys. Oh, duh.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, okay. I mean, for so long, yesterday was kind of a little bit of a rant. Dan, good thing you weren't here. You'd have been pissed at me. But, I mean, guys at these Amazon distributor areas aren't making that much more than I was making in 1975.
Right.
Working on the truck docks. I mean, at some point, I mean, you gotta, the chairman, I'm not accusing anybody you're talking to, the chairman comfortable that his $3 million a year is absolutely perfect for him, can't understand why somebody won't work for 12. I mean,
right.
Come on. I mean, what are you doing? I mean, isn't that what we want, is to have labor to get more of the share of the pie? And the way you do that is supplying them. And I wouldn't mind at all for the next 5 years if the chairmans don't get any raises and the other guys all get 20% or 30 or 40. I mean,
yeah, and I totally agree with you on that. And here in Florida, we, you know, on our last, in November, on the ballot was increase in minimum wage to $15, and that went through. It takes place over a few years, but there's a lot of people in the service industry here, and you know, cost of living isn't as high as it is up there, but it's a move in the right direction, and it's a positive move, I think, for economic activity. You want to be able to sort out who you hire too, I think, at some point. I'd rather have, if I was your friend that ran the business, I'd rather have three or four servers who were really had great customer service and were go-getters, you know, and pay them a little more than have six who were just sort of, you know, okay, or just needed a paycheck.
Well,
so
I think there could be
some differentiation and one way to do it. The way I pay in my business, I pay by value added. I look at if, you know, somebody's able to add a little value, and if that's in good service, or in my case, in good, you know, work on the analyst side, you know, the research reports and all that. And if they're able to put a little more into it, they'll get paid a little more.
Well, so there's no doubt about that. But we've had a huge, like Kevin talks in his area. Well, again, but when you mention, one of these days, I mean, after I talk about it, and you don't disagree with me, I don't think, one of these days we're going to have to start bringing out words we haven't used in a while, like real growth versus nominal growth.
Yeah.
You know, those kinds of things that we thought we were putting in the closet for a while. Let's just hope you think we have to pull out the stagflation word, or we can leave that one buried?
I think for the time being we can leave it buried. I think we are going to see some inflation going forward. I mean, they're talking, you know, especially in the travel area as well. So all these companies that have been, you know, not only has there been and there will continue to be strong demand, let's say, to travel both by plane, by car, hotels, cruise ships, and all that. But some of these companies are going to say, hey, here's a chance for us to make up some of what we lost. So now we have this huge demand. You know, why not increase prices?
But these guys are
going to remain competitive. So,
yeah, how much of that is total? Well, I mean, again, I love it when you come out of people from various parts of the country, because the Chicago experience, me looking out the window here, is so totally different than the BS I hear on TV. It's not even close. We got three or four of our biggest hotels in Chicago still closed, and I know people that have traveled recently, and they said the airfares are cheap. I mean, even though the planes are getting full because they're not flying very many. Now, even, and you know, we still have incredibly, and, you know, you don't have to agree with this, incredibly stupid stuff like 20% of the stadiums are going to be with a mask outside, and yet you can sit basically butthole to elbow on a plane with somebody for 6 hours, and that's okay. I mean, how stupid do we have to be as a society to look at those two rules and say, wait a minute. Nobody's that dumb, Dan. Are they, or are we that dumb collectively?
No, I am totally on board with you. In fact, I think almost every day at some point in the day, I'll say something like, none of this really makes sense to me. You know, going to a place to get vaccine and, you know, the vaccine and just it being almost wall to wall people, you know, at the Civic Center. And you know, people wearing masks, but there still were probably more people in a really confined space than they're you know, they could have been, I guess, for what we were doing. It was sort of ironic, but, and then we have, you know, here in Florida, we don't have any, there's no rules, and then there's no enforcement on top of that, and there's not going to be any enforcement for having, you know, needing a vaccine, at least here, but there might be if you want to travel, you know, somewhere else or go to Europe or, so I
right.
think, you know, like the messages are mixed. And I think the way people are responding is quite different. And I have a few clients who I've talked to over the past week that have decided to buy homes now because we had a great year last year. And I, you know, I think it's good, but they're willing to pay a lot more money because we still have, you know, I think we haven't seen a correction in prices in real estate. And I think you're kind of buying at the top here. But, you know, if that's the time, you know, for a lifestyle point of view, it makes sense. But for, you know, if you're looking for a good, you know, good bargain or a good price, I'm not sure this is the entry.
Well, a lot of times people don't, and it's very difficult because, God, how can I not get in trouble here in case, like, significant other police people are listening? But let's just say,
I know exactly. Yeah, I know.
Let's just say sometimes the not always, but sometimes the female of the species does not look at the home as if it's an investment good. It's a consumption good. Is that a fair way economically to say that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, in general, I think some people have a different view, you know, about money and all that. And one thing, you know, one interesting story that might be good for some of the listeners, we own Chicken Soup for the Soul. That I told you about that, the preferred stock. Great story. I'd be all over it still. We still have a large position. It's had a nice 20% run since we got involved, and we're clipping a really nice coupon. 3-year maturity. He has 3 years left. And they have it's a video on demand business, and they own Crackle, which is one of the networks, where you can actually watch some TV. And they've been, you know, keep telling me about this show called Going From Broke. And it's basically, you know, has a lot to do with the student debt crisis, but it also has a lot to do with the way people look at money. And I watched about 5 of the episodes last night after the earnings call and just, you know, really was fascinated by it, and it just validated a lot of what we think. But, you know, people having very different attitudes about, you know, spending and saving and, you know, responsibility when it comes to finance. And I always say that we need to have, you know, we have to go all the way to kindergarten or grade school and offer finance classes, personal finance classes, so people can understand this.
I try and do this with my significant other and her pals. No. They're all very serious, self-made ladies in real estate, mortgage industry, you know, or in the liquor and distributorship. I'll brighter nog it out. I tell you what, if you want to get yourself harpooned, all you have to do is, I mean, and the weird part is all these ladies, and boy, I'm beating up on the women this morning, which I'm not doing, but you know what, and they could be right. It's just different. Every one of them uses their car incredibly. Like Audrey, you know, she's in the thing all the time. I mean, she'll take a listing somewhere and she'll
And she's spectacular at what she does. And, you know, there isn't a lazy bone in her body. I mean, I'm proud of her just about every. I'll say, oh, you know, you're the person, you and your friends here, you guys, if the lease, depending on the way the leases go, you guys should lease the damn thing for 3 years, and every 3 years, before you have to send it to the mechanic, ship it back and get a new one. Oh, I don't want to lease it. I want to own it. Why would I want to give somebody else? It's no different. It makes absolutely zero difference whether you borrow the money to buy a new one at 8% or have an 8 or 6% or whatever it is and have a lease. The only difference is at the end of 3 years you can buy it or not buy it. I mean, there's no difference whatsoever. Just give it back to the dude. Oh, I want to own it. I'm like, the word own, there's no such thing as own. I mean, you don't own it, the bank owns it.
Right. Yeah. No, I agree. And especially if you're not travel, right, you know, you got to do the buy versus sell on that. It's the same thing with real estate, but for younger people. But the car thing, I agree with. There's, if you're only going to own a car for a few years, I mean, look at it. You know, if you're going to get a brand new car again in 3 years, and you know, you sort of roll over the payments that you've had on the lease. So I actually thought about that for my car. I have a nice car, and I thought about the amount of money I'm spending every month, and then this little light went off yesterday thinking I could have leased this and paid about the same.
Yeah.
So it's you know, now that we're not driving as much, right?
Right.
Now that we're not traveling as much in this environment. So it's that lease, yeah, it does, you know, it's you know, there are a lot of decisions like that. And I think consumption, I mean, the positive part of all this, what we're talking about is consumption will keep consumption up, but I think there's also an element of savings that's just not, you know, not a priority in this country and hasn't been a priority and could get us in trouble again on the, you know, we were talking about the household side being we're going to see issues down the road. And the show that I mentioned, Going From Broke, what's interesting is it had a similar ring to what happened back in, you know, 06, 07 with subprime loans. You know, now with student loans, they have the parent plus loans, which are the ones where the parent basically has to put up collateral if they don't have good credit, and now they're, you know, their houses yeah, up for grabs if the kids can't find good jobs. And there are people that are already stretched from a credit point of view, but whether they're stretched because they made mistakes or they look to go above to live above their means. But the issue is that there is a problem with this that needs to be addressed with student loan debt. And on some level, whether it be credit card debt and student loan debt, there is going to be this, there still is this, you know, problem, if you will, with people not understanding, you know, savings, living within your means, investing, making money on that other money, you know, having that money grow quickly. And that's, takes a little bit of discipline, but it, you know, it's sure a lot easier than having to worry every, you know.
Well, Dan, I mean, a lot of what, I mean, you can get, I mean, I have a bunch of different people, and actually you're probably my least cynical guest. I'd say absolutely my least cynical guest, although I think I'm infecting you a little bit. But you look at these bills and you look at what's happened in the last, I did a study, again, I can't be all that rigorous. It's not like I'm Russell. Well, actually, he says you can't even do that anymore. You can't even like put a bunch of PhD students on your research and make them do it. He's nobody even does that anymore. Don't you hate it when you don't have guys that you can tell to do stuff and do research for you? Anyway, so I was.
I actually do have a few. I've been fortunate. Not
good
PhDs,
for you,
but CFAs and MBAs. Yeah.
Well, good for you. Hey, guys, I need this by tomorrow. Go do it, will you? But I actually went through it from the 2007-2008 period where we've gone into like free money for just about everybody that means something, which isn't you and me. The credit card rates have actually gone up.
Yes.
Which is, I mean, if you're the Federal Reserve and they talk about low interest rates helping people out, hey guys, it might be a good idea, but you better force it through the system and not just trickle it to your buddy and hope that he trickles it down. Because guess what? Those guys don't trickle very well.
Right.
You and I'd be much better tricklers. You and I'd be able to go into the Bass Pro Shops and say bass boats around. Those guys never will.
Right.
I mean,
I hear you. Yeah, and you know, the thing is, you know, sort of again going to the bigger picture, you know, households. You know, if we have a situation coming up with higher rates, you know, obviously we have a situation with a lot of spending that has to be addressed this year, later this year, and you know, we already know. I think it's already built in that we're going to see higher corporate taxes, up to 28%, I guess is what they were talking yesterday. But looking at it, you know, from the sort of the three legs of the market, if I mean, you know, the the consumers, who would be the government, you know, corporate and household. And we look okay right now on the corporate side. A lot of companies, even our high yield companies, don't have as much debt as they used to. They have better cash flow. They're, you know, they're well managed. I'm probably least concerned about the corporate side. I'm more concerned about still the individual and the government side.
Well, it's interesting. The people you deal with that you talk about, you're actually, here's the yin and the yang here, and tell me if I'm wrong. The people you talk about that are still paying a decent return, those are the guys you're finding, right?
Right.
They have incentive to I'll use the term, clean up the balance sheet, and you have less debt because they're paying a reasonable amount. The other people, the beneficiaries of this incredible largesse, the Amazons, the Microsoft, the Apple, they've actually increased their debt over the last few years because they're getting stuff at 2% or 3%.
Right.
So, I mean, in one sense, those people have gone out, their balance sheets look way worse than they did 8 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. And those businesses 8 years ago would not have been, they wouldn't have been financing through debt. That was just not a way that a tech company financed back then. In the high-yield market, I can say from 35 years in the business, you know, we didn't have a whole lot of tech names in our sector of the market. So, and now there are. There's no question about it. And they're harder to analyze from a bond point of view, from a cash flow point of view, because you got to take into account the growth element and a lot of other variables that are more difficult, I think, to predict than you would in a steady cash flow business like an industrial company or, even a casino or a some businesses that just have very predictable cash flow.
Dan, when you look at this bill, I want to get a little bit of a, even though you try and hide it, you have a pretty interesting, I think, very sound view of the world. When you talk about, listen to Biden talk yesterday, I don't know that much about what, I guess I can have a clue of the more Wi-Fi development, more those kinds of things. But that's not part of this bill. That's the next bill, I think, or am I wrong on that? But I mean, when you talk about stuff like the 30s stuff, you're talking about, the Holland Tunnel, you're talking about Hoover Dam, you're talking about the Golden Gate Bridge, where the TVA, when you're doing stuff that is tremendously accretive to the economy, and then during the 50s, it was the interstate highway system, where at the end of the day, it was the best buy anybody ever made anywhere. Well, if you let all that stuff just go into disrepair, and all of a sudden you get a bill to, quote, fix it. I don't know how accretive is that. I mean, you're making up money, you're getting jobs, but I don't know that this thing here in the downtown here, the burn interchange, we're pushing 12 years, $90 bazillion, more than it costs to build all the expressways combined. But at the end of the day, it's so clogged up, I don't even know that you don't lose so many people that at the end of the day, you didn't even need to do it. I guess the question is, how much do you think we're just pissing away? We're not ending up with anything new that I can see. I'm sure there is some stuff that's new. I'm trying to figure out what you read on the breakdown. Fixing a bridge that you haven't painted for 30 years, that doesn't get you anywhere. You're back to the same old bridge.
Yeah, I think your point the point that I agree with where you started out was sort of like when you're talking about some of the big, like the Golden Gate Bridge or some of the, the bigger attractions, if you will make us, competitive globally. It'll certainly help on a global competitive level. And on the local level, I sort of agree with you that there's been stuff that's been let go for so long, and then the process, may take a few years to update it or add a lane if you're talking about a road. All that being said, I'm seeing activity here that's moving very quickly in terms of expansion, probably quicker than I've ever seen. So there seems to be a focus now to get things done. And the fact that it's been delayed, I don't know that that's necessarily going to delay demand, if that makes sense. I think there's going to continue to be, some people are going to feel safer, if you will, driving, and it's just going to bring more people now that we have new systems. It's going to take some time.
Well, I guess the question I'm nibbling at, and that's why I'm loving having a debate with you or debated discussion, is you're in a state where people are moving, okay, and it's vibrant, and you need another lane in the road because you got more people. Now, here in Chicago, where do you think those people are coming from?
Right.
So I'm saying, is there a net gain countrywide here? Or are we just shifting stuff? Are we building homes in Florida because nobody wants to live in downtown Chicago and we got a building here that's empty? I mean, I don't see that necessarily as accretive. It's sort of like if the economy is growing at 1%, which means it's not growing at all, really. Anybody who gets a raise is getting a raise because some other guy didn't get one. It's not. I mean, I'm trying to figure out whether we're moving forward. Are we going to be able to move forward together, where everybody gets a little piece of this or not? And I keep coming back with the, I'm not so sure about that. And
I don't know that everybody gets an equal piece of it, but everybody is going to benefit. Like, I'd say the lion's share of the U.S. is going to benefit from this growth. You're in places like Chicago, New York, any of the cities, I think are in sort of, you know, they've kind of gone through the worst over the last year. They were not the beneficiaries of what we've been through, but there will be a time when more people move back. They're going to miss that environment. A lot of people end up coming to Florida and they go back to New York just because they miss they don't have all of the, whether it be the cultural things or just really more the energy of the city, if you will. That's sort of the energy, the restaurant, the networking, you know, all of that, which you're not going to have here. So over time, I think it's going to change back, and I think it's going to, I think that part is going to happen sooner than later. So as we get back to normal and people are traveling again, I think, you know, I've seen a lot of people who've moved to Florida who end up going back up north and getting a condo. So yep. Where they used to live out in the suburbs of Chicago or New York, now they've got a place in the city or close to the city, and, you know, at some point that's going to come back again, and it might just take a little while.
Well, Dan, we're running over here, but I got to ask you one more question. Frank's on the line; he's listening. So, I want to ask you when you do this economically, the idea is you're going out and you're borrowing money from your population for these kinds of programs. So, say you pay, you know, I'm going back to traditionally, you pay 5%, 4%, with the whole idea being at the end of the day, the things that you built give you a way more than a 4 or 5% return, which clearly with the interstate highway system and certain bridges and certain tunnels, you sure as hell did, right? This time they're not going to do any of that. They're just going to create money, print it, send it out there, hope that the inflation thing doesn't take a chunk out of everybody's hide. I don't know where that lands at this level. Do you? I mean, it seems to me that it's a house built on a straw foundation. I don't see that as a way to do anything. They're not even acting like they're going to get some kind of a return for it. They're just saying we're printing the money and spending it.
I understand. I think the way it's being discussed is not really where all the benefits are going to come. You know, you're not really hearing the benefits, and I think the benefits are going to be over time. I don't think it's going to happen immediately, but I do think it's an investment that's being made today that I think we're gonna you know, recoup over a matter of years. You know, it isn't going to be like tomorrow. You know, if they knock the thing out in 6 months or a year, it doesn't mean that there's going to be like demand waiting. There might be demand waiting, but I do think that, you know, I do have enough faith in the people who are making the decisions on the specifics at the local level on how to do this. And, you know,
Dan,
I think that's really, you know, I might be a little more optimistic on that than you, but I think the time frame isn't going to be immediate.
From your lips to God's ear, I have problems calling a printing press an investment. I guess that's where I'm coming from.
I do too. I understand.
All right, buddy. Take care. We'll talk to you next. Have a nice weekend. Holidays and all that stuff.
Nice holiday.
Futures up 15.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Come back. We have Mr. Frank Fahey. We got to talk about exchanges and the closings and all kinds of being closed tomorrow, but sort of half open. We'll talk about all that when we get back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, Lone Wolf Bank Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. He's Mr. Dave Scatina on the board. SP Futures up 15, 15. Nasdaq Futures up 153. I'm looking at this quote that's perfect for you, David, from Roald Dahl. Those who don't believe in magic will never find it. That's you, bud. Just saying.
That's me.
That's true, though. If you don't believe in it, you'll never find it. But it doesn't mean you're going to find it anyway, does it?
No, it doesn't.
The top futures up 42. We have over in Europe, we got rallies going on here. Not huge, but rallies across the board. DAX up 72.5%. FTSE up 32.5%. CAC around up 27.5%. Right across the board. Don't see that too often. Nikkei up 210.7%. Shanghai up 24.7%. But the outliers, Hang Seng, up 562%. They're really off to the races. Bonds down four basis points, which is wild. 1.69, or actually 1.7, 1.698. The Bund minus 0.02 to minus 0.31. Japan positive 0.02 to 0.12, which is as high as we've seen it, which is weird because they just started to go the other way and now they're coming back. They took a dip with that, well, they took a dip coinciding with the Nomura story early in the week, but now they've come all the way back and actually gone a little bit more positive. Oil up 48 cents, but still under 60. We were down yesterday. 59.64. Brent up 51 cents. 63.25. Natural gas down a penny. 2.59. RBOB up a penny. 1.97. And we've got gold is now up 2.70 to 17.18. So bouncing back from its time down in the 1600s. Silver down 7 cents to 24.46. Gold had a nice rally yesterday. Copper down a penny. 3.97. And we've got the Bitcoin down 515 to 58,620. David, we got for us traffic, weather, sports. Did they clean up the steel bridge yet?
Yeah, they're starting to work on that. Good morning. It's 7:38 in Chicago. Traffic this morning's been kind of a mess on the south side due to the icy conditions on the steel bridge. There's accidents right now. Right and left shoulders block Torrance Avenue, Route 83 at 294 Bishop Ford Parkway. That place has been a mess all morning. We also have an accident report on I-57 North right before Halsted Street at exit 357. There's on the Kennedy, we got a stalled FedEx truck in the right lane at the Kennedy West at Keeler Road. And I-55 is back up due to the ramp on 94. You got the construction on the Kennedy and the Eisenhower. It's just been kind of a crazy morning.
I'd turn back if I were you.
Yeah, be careful. Today, Chicago, the weather, 27 to partly cloudy. Our highs today are going to be 37 for the opener with sunshine and mixed clouds. For our Phoenix listeners, it's 60 degrees in the fair. It's going to be a hot one there today, 95 and sunny. Sports, baseball opening day. At Wrigley, when the 10,000 fans that are allowed, then the Cubs will host the Pirates at 1:20 p.m. The White Sox will be at the Angels tonight with a 9:05 start, and the Diamondbacks are at the Padres, say, at 3:05. In the NBA last night, the Bulls lose to the Suns, 121-116. Last night in the NHL, Colorado beat Arizona 9-3. Wow. And tonight, the Hawks take on the Carolina Hurricanes.
Did the guy make any saves?
That's crazy. That's a crazy score. Also, we wanted to bring up tomorrow the trading floors. There is CBOE will be closed. Merck usually is, but the interest rate options will be open till 10 p.m. tomorrow. Back to you, Chief.
So what did Garrett Morris say on Saturday Night Live? Baseball has been very, very good to me.
Yes, he did.
Very good to me. Frank, how are you? But a little late, but we got you, buddy. How are you?
Well, that's okay. It's too cold for baseball at Wrigley Field. I've done home openers under the upper deck with the wind howling in from the north like it is today. It's even too cold to hold your beer with gloves.
The Ellis Green's first year, you want to make sure the opener was, we had 3 inches like wet snow the night before, and they shoveled the outfield, and then the sun came and took care of that. And the, but you actually were, I was smart enough to bring my winter shoes, so when I was sitting in slush, at least my feet didn't get all wet, type of thing. They shoveled the seats, but where else are you going to put it? It was all on the ground, type of thing, so.
Well, I've been to a few football games like that in my life.
Oh, yeah. I used to get, my cousin was he had Bears season tickets since 1963. And thank God he didn't get the, ticket lottery. So you have to buy one of those expensive seats. So he got seats over with the Great Unwashed, which would be the West Side.
The Howe family.
Yeah. Well, everybody up there is the Great. You get guys like Shanny and people up there. Those are the people that don't have the seat licenses. So the way Soldier Field, when you walk in, you have your own entrance and exit. You don't even walk by the halves, right, David? You walk in on the west side,
yeah,
and you sit with the Great Unwashed, basically, and up high. The seats are not bad, but they're so high up. My cousin's seats ended up being like the fourth row, and we were higher than the old. Well, they're still there. The light towers of the old Soldier Field. That's how high those things are. So when you're looking down and you're seeing guys, you got to be how many 150 yards from the people. I mean the players. I mean it's you're way the hell up there, but yeah, it can be. But I had the first row upper deck at Wrigley, looking right down the third baseline for years, versus my season tickets, and I split them with Big Dan. So I had a half a season ticket. In the summertime, they were spectacular. I mean, how hard it got, you're in the shade, just really really nice, but. When the wind was coming off the lake, the first thing that the wind hit when it hit the land was your nose.
Oh God, I've been there. I went to a home opener once where I was about halfway up behind home plate, and that literally it's the coldest I've ever been at any athletic event.
Well,
the home opener too.
We went to like a night game. Again, when the idiots start having night games like early in the season, so mm-hmm. I go. Dr. J's bro Pete calls me up and he goes, "Hey, Chief, I hear you got those seats. I've never sat up there. What you want to go to a game?" I said, "Pete, I got 3 games this week. I can't give away. Let's go. If you and John want to go, we'll get some other sucker and we'll go." So we're sitting up there, and it's freezing. So finally, some hot dog wrapper spins up from the bottom, gets into the wind, and whacks Pete right in the face. And he goes, "That's it. Let's get out of here." It was like the 6th inning. We went down to the stadium club and watched the rest of it there. I mean, it was just nasty. I mean, but you know, like I said, during the summer they were the best seats in the house. So,
oh, the great seats! I got a foul ball once in those seats.
We had talk about a foul ball story. Foul ball story. They originally started out as 305 seats back in the '80s, when you could leave the trading floor and hustle up there and you missed the first inning. Well, Steve Carlton was pitching, And he had such an amazing slider and stuff that the right-handed batters, and of course there's nobody there during the week, so they had some you might remember this guy. He was one of the buffoons that used to trade at first stop back before the tax law changed, where every business had people here just to essentially roll their tax money. And he's one of those kind of weird old little dudes. I was going to say dweeby little dude, but little dude who can't do that anymore. So he brings his mitt to the game. And sure enough, a ball comes right at him, and he's got the mitt. He looks up, closes his eyes, ball hits the mitt, it drops. Some little kid snatches it from the ground before he can reach over. He gets another one, like two innings later, right to him again. Drops that one. Same kid grabs the ball. And finally, two innings later, he gets one and he hangs on to it. He was 1-for-3 with a mitt.
Wow.
But Steve Carlton, you were just getting shelled up there because none of the right-handed batters could get around on his slider. It was almost like a screwball the guy had. I'm going to say that he was the best left-handed pitcher I ever saw pitch. I saw him because I always managed to make it out there when the Phillies were... but he was such a kind of a nasty dude to reporters. And what, he's like a seventh-degree black belt, and nobody talked to the guy. But, I mean, I don't know.
I would say a sober Sam McDowell was better.
You think so? Yeah, I never saw him. I mean, but I'm saying I watched him pitch, and he... If you say who's the best left-handed pitcher you ever saw, I would easily say Steve Carlton that I ever saw. I mean, you don't see everybody, obviously. But he was unhittable. The one year, what, he won half the games the Phillies won or something? He won 28 and they won 55 or some ridiculous number.
Oh, they were such a horrible team.
Yeah, but they couldn't beat him.
When I was growing up, we used to make fun of Phillies fans and Cubs fans.
Oh, yeah. Hey, I have a serious question for you, Frank. Yesterday we got a email from one of our listeners, a gentleman from Wisconsin, very, very nice. Said he's been enjoying the shows even more lately that we've gotten more technical, which I thought I was driving people away, but he said he's learning a lot. But he had a question, and I know the road answer, and I sent him an email back. But as I dug more into it, which I promised him I would, said I'd talk to him on the air with you on, because you know this stuff too. It seems like the answer is getting more elusive the more I talk about it. The question was, if you have an options contract, and all of a sudden, okay, either your stock, something happens to it, and it closes trading, or the whole market closes trading, what happens to your option? And of course, my first answer was, and still the correct one is, you have the right to exercise that option no matter what. If it's not trading, yes, if the stock is not trading, depending on when the deadline is, which, you know, normally would be the Friday or whatever that you have the option for, you may have to make a judgment as to where the stock's going to open, not knowing where it is going to open, or where it's trading like in a minute before, like you normally do. So then I end up talking to a couple of people for the exchanges. It turns out, Frank, there's all kinds of debate on this. Some people, I mean, I'm right currently, but there's all kinds of, some people think you should lose the, I mean, these are actually debates these idiots are having. What is wrong with these people?
Well, what changed the whole equation is weeklies. Because before we always had the monthlies. And I remember once I had this happen to me, and everything was exercised by exception. Every single option you had to make a decision on, yes, no. And that becomes a crapshoot, because if you don't know what's happening, you have, you know, do I exercise my long out of the money puts? Now that you have weeklies, it's an entirely different story.
Why?
And I don't know, and it's more likely that it will happen to boot.
Well, it used to be every option, every stack had an option that expired 3-4 times a year. Then we went to monthlies, now we're at weeklies.
Right.
But no matter what, it still could happen. It's just a greater chance of it happening now.
Yes, exactly.
Will
automation make it less of a chance?
Well,
and of course, it's another thing that benefits the people that have access to the dark markets.
Well, sure. I mean, obviously the biggest question is, okay, and my brother Dan, he was in, you should know this, Frank, because you trade in those same crowds. He said when he traded in Chrysler, there was a stack, and I seem to remember it. It was a Canadian company of some kind that closed on a Friday and didn't open up closed on a Wednesday and didn't open up till. I mean, there's been one or two or three instances of individual stacks that I can sort of recall. I mean, Dan remembered this one like it was yesterday because it was a big deal in his pit. And the trick was you could exercise on the Friday night, but you had no idea where the stack was. So therein lies the rub. And if you don't know where it's trading, why you know, if you got the 40 calls, you know, if the stack's 20 or 60, it's kind of it's a tough decision. But he said, you know,
it's a huge difference if you have retail margin instead of market maker margin.
Oh, sure, yeah. But I mean, I guess they're sliding more towards a case by case basis. But my original answer is still correct. I mean, you own the right to exercise. Now, how you get to do that, or what knowledge you have when it comes time, I guess that's the part that's in the ether. Is that a fair statement?
Well, yeah, you got to go. You know, we can go to the contract definitions, but you know, there's contracts or words that define what the contract is, and that's where you get in trouble. Well, that's a real good question.
I didn't think it was that good. I thought it was simple. You still have the right to exercise, which I think still is the case. Now the question is when and how do you know whether you should or not become now the question.
Well, that's the question too. And I can't imagine them taking away your right to exercise something.
No.
A clearing firm might if you don't have the margin, if you don't have the money in your account. If you're a retail trader.
I think that they have to blow you out beforehand. That's what IB does.
But they don't know if they should blow you out beforehand.
Well,
it's not trading, because they don't want to make that decision and be wrong.
Well, you can always put in a do not exercise.
Right.
Just since we started this, here's where the rules are. Okay, if you own the 40 calls or 40 puts, but let's say you own the 40 calls, right now if it closes at 40.01, it's an automatic exercise, right? If it's $39.99, it's not. If it's 40, you got to let them know one way or the other, but it's not an automatic. But it could be trading 41, and for some reason you don't want to exercise. You call up your brokerage firm, or I don't know what you do with the ones that you can't call, but clearly here you can call PTI and say, I don't want to exercise. And we can put in, we can call the clearing firm and say, we want to put a do not exercise in for Dave's, you know, 500, JetBlue or whatever the hell he's got. And that's fine. You can put in a do not exercise.
Or you can put in a do exercise.
Or if it's 30, yeah.
I had 10, 20 calls in American Shoe, which was something that was traded on the Amex. The stock closed at 18.5. I get upstairs and at 3:20, I'd always go through and check the prices. American Shoe's trading $23.
Okay,
so I sold 1,000 shares at $23, you know, dollars after the close, and exercised calls that were $1.50 out of the money. And boy, I mean, I had to argue with people. I had to get, you know, the head of the clearing firm to call up for a stop. I had, you know, I was at a boutique group at the time, and it was a pain in the butt.
Well, how many people do you think they've gone through?
I went to 3:30, if you remember to exercise.
You had to 3:30, except on when? On Thursday nights. And why was Thursday night? Well, in the OEX, you had to let people know by 3:15, right? Because in a cash-settled option, an exercise is essentially a trade. It's not, how can I put this, without being confusing the hell out of everybody? I can't. So I just have to say it the way it is.
That's right. You guys used to do the early exercise of puts.
Yeah,
I never did that. I was an equity trader.
Okay, well, in the OEX, which not many people trade anymore, but there's still a traumatic advantage in trading that stock, that particular index. Let's pick IBM. I'm looking at the middle of my screen. It's up 19 cents, 133.45. If you own the 125 calls for today in IBM, and you exercise them, okay, you're gonna own the stock now, assuming you get the money to pay for it. But the in-the-money call versus the in-the-money versus the stock, you're still talking about a 100 delta item. It's not necessarily a trade. I mean, clearly it is if the stock opens up at 120. You lose much more money on the stock you could on the call. But let's forget about that for a second. It's more of an exchange of a deep-in-the-money option, or it doesn't have to be deep-in-the-money, of an option for stock. In the OEX,
yeah, for shares of stock, not dollars.
Yeah, and in the OEX, you actually you got a cash settlement. So if it closed at 5:30 and you exercised the 25s, you got $5. But there's no position left for you or the other guy. It's a cash thing. So it's essentially a trade where you don't have, if he thinks he has the short 25s against something else, the next day he doesn't, right? He's got nothing. It's just like he sold them to you, right? So it's a whole different ball game. But since somebody traded, I won't go too deep into that, but it, you know, some of this stuff, that's why, talk about a shameless plug. I mean, if you, you know, continue to think that you've got all this figured out and can run through, you know, the firm that, first of all, if you believe you're getting free commissions, you don't have it figured out. Is my right, David? Is that a fair statement? If you think they're really free, you don't have it figured out. I mean, how's that for a blanket statement? But if you don't have somebody, I mean, even the stuff at IB, I mean, we have two clearing firms at PTI, and we have RBC and we've got IB. If people want to use the stuff electronically, use IB. But they go through us. So if they do have a question like that, they have somebody to call.
And you know who to call.
Yeah. Well, but a lot of the questions we can just answer. I mean, obviously.
And this brings up a real good point, Tom. If you're trading options, read the contract definition.
Well, why would anybody do that?
I mean, people will say, well, I didn't know that can happen. It's the second sentence in the, you know, the definition.
You're talking about the guy who's trying to put together the picnic table, and when you say to him, well, did you read the instructions, he's insulted.
Exactly.
Yeah. Why would I read the instructions? Well, the same reason why you're asking me how to put the thing together, right? It's
like people trading a partial tender that don't, the options on a stock that's a partial tender and not reading the terms of the tender.
Yep.
It's like.
All right, so what did you think of, I have the willies about, we only have a few minutes here, Frank. We have the willies about this infrastructure plan and taxes that, quote, pay for it. I'm not sure. Let's put it this way. I'm watching the construction here in Chicago, and I'm watching a bunch of other things, and I'm watching the way some of this money's getting wasted. And the more you put into the shoe, the more it seems like stuff's sliding out of the shoe to the wrong hands.
Well, there's some things that make a lot of sense to me. I'll tell you the two that I look out at that make sense. Replacing every lead pipe in the water system makes sense to me. And what really makes sense is pushing the internet, high-speed internet, to the corner of America.
I don't have a problem with that.
The biggest problem is, can we do it without buying Chinese equipment?
All right, my question regarding the lead stuff, and it's like when Biden is talking about, I mean, again, I have this South Side, everybody's stealing everything mentality. I don't need the federal government to bail out Commonwealth Edison for power lines when Commonwealth Edison has been raising rates for 50 years based on maintenance of the power line, and they just don't do it. Now somebody else has.
I don't disagree on that, but there's parts of the country. Yeah, I don't want to bail out Texas's electrical distribution either when they've really done it on the cheap forever.
I mean, Chicago's been charging people pretty fair sized water bills for 100 and some years. You think, why do we still have lead pipes? Why do we
have a whole lot less than we did before?
That's true.
Here's one that you were probably unaware of. But all around Lake Michigan, people used to mix the storm water and the sewage water.
Chicago still
does. And we have segregated that over probably the past 30 years.
Who's we? Chicago mixes it?
Not like it used to.
It's every bit as bad as it used to.
Milwaukee's the one that's bad.
And that's why the deep tunnel is there, but... Yeah, you're right. The storm system should be different than the sewer system, but none of these.
But all these little towns, you know, you start going Manistee, you know, Leland, Ludington, Pentwater, all of them, they now have, they've segregated the sewer system.
Well, they,
but I guess it's easier to do in Pentwater than Chicago.
Well, the storm drains, they end up having retention ponds, and they're all over the place. I mean, and even a,
Well, you're a Southsider. It was in your basement, right?
Well, right. It was in your basement. But even like a Walmart, if you build a Walmart in those towns, you have to be able to retain up to 4 inches of rainwater on the property. That's why you see big, big, like, undulations in the parking lot. Because if there's a big rainstorm, the parking lot's the retention pond. Right?
Oh, I know. You can drive. There's a place on Cal Ave in Munster. A Target that all of a sudden you get a big rain and it's under 10 feet of water.
Hopefully not. You're not parked there, Frank. SP Futures up 18. NASDAQ is up 149. Looks like we're going to put the whip to it the day before Good Friday. We'll talk
about
it.
I don't know. I mean, we 4,000 is a huge number on the S&P 500. You know, are we going to make it?
I don't know. All I know is we're up on the gold today, and I took one of these little cheap shots, Frank. And as of right now, it's right in the driver's seat, so that's a good news. We'll talk to you this weekend, hopefully.
Okay,
everybody else
like
we'll talk Monday morning.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.